all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Good afternoon. I am Jim Fossone, Lieutenant JG type. I'm piloting the Veterans Radio Riverboat today on WAAM Ann Arbor Talk Radio. We've got a great program involving Mission United, which is a program of the United Way. And in the second half of the program today, we're going to be talking to John James, an Army veteran, West Point graduate, businessman, and now seeking some to further public service through elected office. So strap in and enjoy the ride. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today, Stephen B. Moss. Stephen's an Army veteran, and we have him on today to talk about Mission United. Stephen, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks very much, Jim. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's back up a little bit, and you're of the vintage. You served in the Army and spent a year in Vietnam. Tell us what Uncle Sam had you doing.
Well, I went through ROTC in college, deferred till I got out of law school, and then went on active duty for 2 years, the second of which I was a company commander in I Corps in Vietnam, outside Da Nang near Marble Mountain, of a transportation company, and was actually there from Halloween of 69 to Halloween of 70. So I spent my first year at Fort Eustis, Virginia, which is a transportation school, Newport News area, and enjoyed that quite a bit. And then I got my orders to go to Vietnam and spent 1 year over there.
Well, I just wanted our listeners to hear that and confirm that little twang they hear in your voice, that you're a good, you're a good Southern boy, and you are now down in Florida and have been for a long time practicing law at Holland and Knight.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Jacksonville, Florida, and after that came down to South Florida to after the service came down to South Florida to practice law, and I've had a great career with Holland and Knight, wonderful law firm.
And as a result, you've been recognized a number of ways for your pro bono work over the years, but maybe the one I should point out is Army One Source Excellent Award in 2017. Tell us a little bit about what that was a recognition of.
Well, Army One Source, part of Mission United and the United Way is developing partnerships in the community, and that's been one of the biggest advantages of the success of the program is the partnerships that, and relationships that have been formed. And one of our partnerships was with Army One Source. And at each of our monthly meetings, we'd have a representative from Army One Source would attend the meetings. We got to know each other. They asked me actually to speak at a national forum, which I did through a telephone webinar, actually, and it was a nationwide experience that asked me to focus on Mission United and discuss Mission United and its relationship with Army One Source. They also invited me to attend a regional meeting to discuss with people in the Southeast with Army One Source about Mission United and the work that we're doing to assist veterans and their families and communities. So as Mission United has grown from just being with the United Way of Broward County, where it initiated in Greater Fort Lauderdale, to now 25 cities, and it's part of a national expansion that United Way Worldwide initiated on Veterans Day 2016, we've expanded with Army One Source. So I was honored to receive that award, but most importantly for me is not really receiving the honor, but having an opportunity to spread the word about Mission United and the great work that it's doing for veterans and their families, and assisting veterans and their families. That's the best part of all of this, and that's what it's really all about.
Yeah, that's what we're here to talk about, which is really, I think a lot of people have heard of United Way, but maybe they haven't thought about how it might apply to them and in the veterans world. I'm not sure we veterans would think that United Way is available to help us. I'm not sure who we exactly have as the demographic it's supposed to serve. But Mission United got started down in 2013 in Broward County. You were its founding chair. Can you tell us what the original thought about Mission United was down in Broward County, and then how that evolved over the next, what are we at now, 5 years to involve 25 different locations across the country where there's a specific Mission United program?
Well, thank you, Jim. And I'll add a little preface to my comments in that our daughter decided that she wanted to serve her country and join the Army. She was interested in law enforcement as a career, joined the military police corps, and was in military police school when the Iraqi war broke out. She actually was wounded in a firefight and stayed with her unit till their tour was over and came back and had a misdiagnosis of what was her shoulder injury, and it took 2 years to get the surgery she needed, caused a permanent disability in her left shoulder. But that delay and the difficulty she had in navigating the system was sort of the inspiration behind Mission United. At an annual United Way meeting a few years later, after her surgery at the VA hospital in Seattle, it was announced that United Way was going to do something it's never done before, and it's going to reach out to the veterans and their families in our community. United Way has three precepts of health, education, and financial stability, but it had not yet at that time focused on the veteran population. We have close to 100,000 veterans in Broward County without a military base here. So they asked for volunteers to come together to come to a first meeting. I was one of six who showed up at the first meeting, was asked to be the chair, and we started to develop a program.
I've got to interrupt here, Stephen, because every Army veteran, every one of your fellow Army veterans is going, man, he is a dumb son of a bitch. He didn't learn anything when he was in the Army. You don't show up and volunteer like that. They're going to put you on point. And that's exactly what happened, wasn't it?
Well, and actually, it's exactly what I wanted, because when you're at the VA hospital, after 4.5 hours of reconstructive surgery of our daughter, and the surgeon said, unfortunately, the system failed you, they waited too long to give you the surgery you needed, and he said, you need to have physical therapy for 6 months, you can't work, you can't go back to school, but that's the best treatment for you. And then a representative of the VA walks into the hospital room and said, I've talked to your surgeon. He's recommending 6 months of physical therapy. We'll provide three. But then he said something that changed my life. He said to us that, you'll be getting disability payments, but the VA is backlogged right now, and it could be 6 months to a year before you get your first check. We were all dumbfounded. Our daughter, who's not shy and we're very proud of, spoke up and said, well, fortunately, my parents are able to help me financially because I can't work. I can't go back to school. I've got to go to physical therapy every day. But what happens to other of my fellow soldiers who don't have that financial support? And the VA representative said to us, with his head hung low, Jim, they go homeless until they get their first check. And that was a defining moment that changed my life. So when I heard the call from the United Way, I actually looked at my wife and she said, this is your time. So it's really something that I wanted to do to try to not to criticize the VA, but to try to help the system and gather friends together and colleagues and clients and to get together and try to help change the system and help veterans navigate the system better. And that was the impetus, really, to start Mission United.
And I think it's really important for, and I applaud United Way to recognize the need for a specific door or way in for veterans. As a tribe, we veterans are, a lot of pride, can be stubborn, connect better with other veterans than just I'm going to go in and talk to a social worker or some soft scientist who doesn't understand what I've been through. So I think this is the maybe part of the key to Mission United is that it's really focused on getting veterans in the door and helping them navigate. How does that happen?
Well, the first thing we did is we reached out to every organization in the community that we could identify that provided services to veterans and their families. And we asked them, do you want the United Way to get involved? And including the VA. And they all said yes, that we need a convener. We need somebody to bring the community together. We have some great organizations that are doing great work, but we're not really a unified unit. And so that's what United Way really did, is it brought everyone together. It raised money to help fund some of the other organizations, provided case management, and then did a tremendous public relations campaign to get the word out to veterans and their families who need assistance and also those who wanted to volunteer to provide assistance. So it became a selfless collaboration where egos are left at the door, and it's all just working together, having a community come together to do something that should have been done for years and years and years past. It's great to cheer and thank a veteran for his or her service when they come back from serving in war. But it's even better when the community embraces them and says, you know, how can we assist you? And the whole design initially was to help those reacclimate to civilian life when they come back into civilian life, although our span of veterans that we assist are from World War II to current. But we've employed the areas of service that have included pro bono legal services. We have over 420 lawyers just in Broward County who have signed up to do pro bono legal services for veterans and their families. And housing, since we have started, Jim, and you mentioned we started January 30, 2013, we've assisted over 6,000 veterans and their families in Broward County, over 1,200 former homeless veterans or veterans facing foreclosure are now in housing and are employed, and our success rate is currently 95%. Education, working with all of the education institutions in the community, they now all have a veteran services coordinator at every college and university in Broward County. Employment, working with our local employment offices. All of this is done in partnership, and getting the word out at the same time, with media, providing pro bono also, just like the lawyers have, to get the word out to the community that we're here to help, and it includes financial services as well as healthcare and mental health. So those are the six pillars. Each of the United Ways are doing what's appropriate in their communities. In some communities, there's already a great homeless initiative, so the United Way doesn't need to do that. But wherever the need might be, the United Way has said it's going to step up. And United Way Worldwide determined on Veterans Day 2016 that it was going to do a national launch. It's the first time that a local initiative of the United Way has been part of now of a national platform. And it's just been a tremendous, tremendous relationship to assist veterans and their families. And there is a focus on and families, not just the veterans, but their families as well.
Well, I want to back up to this to make sure our veteran radio listeners understand. And we're talking to Stephen Moss, who is very involved with Mission United down in the United Way of Broward County, but is giving us this national perspective, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But the thing I wanted to back up to was, Stephen, Mission United is not recreating the wheel here. It is collaborating and having partnerships with other nonprofits or organizations so that if a veteran needs employment issues, you may turn to some other organization to help him or her find employment or housing or food or educational or mental health benefits. it's a collaboration that you're bringing together, where United Way and Mission United is kind of this unifier of these other groups. Do I have it right?
You have it exactly right, Jim. It is a collaboration. It's a seamless, warm handoff to different organizations who can provide those services. So United Way is working in tandem throughout the communities with other organizations, and it's a beautiful partnership. It really is working. It's a holistic approach of working together, not being concerned about who gets credit for anything, but just that collaboration and teamwork of making sure that the veteran is served. And, you know, somebody will come in as a veteran and say, I 2 months behind on my mortgage payment. Can you give me the money to make the payment? And the answer is no, we're not going to put a Band-Aid on it. But why are you 2 months behind? Well, I've lost my job. Well, let us connect you with someone who can help you get a job. And let us connect you with a lawyer who pro bono will talk to your lender and forbear foreclosing on you for a couple of months till you get that job. And you know, that is how it works. And it's just working together to enhance the lives of veterans. Again, not just putting a Band-Aid and a quick fix, but really improving the veterans' lives forever.
And I had the chance to talk with a Mission United representative up in the Fort Myers area. So a few of these questions I've been sitting on waiting for this opportunity, because I want you to – you used the same language he did about a warm handoff and earlier a case manager. This isn't just calling a phone number and your phone's going to be transferred over to somebody else. Can you talk to us about the Mission United approach here, which is really this, what a warm handoff means and what a case manager is about?
Yeah, thank you, Jim. There's a phone call or phone number to call in each of the communities where Mission United has started. It might be at the United Way office, or it might be at 211, which is a hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Somebody is on the phone, and they'll answer Mission United, how may we assist you? So that initial intake is done that way, and then a determination is made of what the services are that are needed by the veteran. And then in our case with United Way Broward County, they are immediately turned over to one of our case managers at United Way. So an email goes out immediately to that person. That person contacts the veteran, has the veteran come in to meet with the case manager in a very private setting. If the veteran's unable to come to the United Way, then we'll go to them. And does an initial intake on what the veteran needs, and often it's more than perhaps just that initial thing, like in the example I just gave you. But it is that connection, and then the determination by the case manager, who's employed in this case by the United Way, but it could be a different organization, who's making that assessment and not just giving a phone number to the veteran to call, but calling that number while the veteran is there and saying, I have someone here, he's coming over to see you, make an appointment, follow up, and make sure that it was done. And I do want to mention the VA, because we've had an amazingly wonderful relationship locally with our Veterans Administration offices and for benefits, for health care. We are getting, just in Broward County, 100 referrals a month from our local VA to Mission United, and then often we will then, you know, have those warm handoffs elsewhere. But the relationship with the VAs have been excellent, and I just want to emphasize that, because they often get a very bad rap, and we are really working hard to improve that system, and the VA is working hard, working closely with us to help improve that image as well.
Well, I think it's great work, and it allows a veteran who maybe has been, you know, out of state, overseas, disconnected from a network of folks that would otherwise give him or her referrals, to know where to go to make that initial contact for those referrals that he doesn't know about or she doesn't know about. So I think this is this is like going to your first sergeant and saying, I got this problem, and how are you going to fix it for me? And they're going to start you down the path. So There are, what, 25 United Ways now across the eastern United States that have a Mission United component?
There's actually 25 now that either have started Mission United. I think there's 21 that have started and 4 that are on the cusp of starting. There are many others that are in the planning stages, and it is truly all over the country. There's actually one 2 hours from you, west of Ann Arbor, the United Way of Berry County, in Hastings, Michigan. And I talked to the leaders there yesterday. They're doing some great work there with a population of 50,000 people and 5,000 veterans in their community, and doing tremendous work. So it can be small or large communities. In Florida, we're in Miami and Tampa, Orlando, in addition to Fort Lauderdale, and you mentioned Fort Myers and some other smaller counties. But we're spread out in Birmingham, Alabama. We've got northern Santa Barbara County in California, Colorado Springs.
And Stephen, if they want more information, and I know there's a map up where the dots are, that where these specific locations are. Tell us how people connect with Mission United of United Way.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. To go on the website, missionunited.org. It's all you need to do, and you'll get the website. You get all the information that you need. And I'd love for the listeners to go on the website to see the wonderful work we're doing in collaboration with other great organizations. It's something very special. I'm just a volunteer with the United Way, and I'm so passionate about the great work they're doing and so proud to be able to do the work that we are. But it's missionunited.org, O-R-G.
Well, I want to thank you for spending some time with Veterans Radio this afternoon to get the message out. I think the work that began in Broward County and is now spreading across the country for United Way is a great entry point for our veterans to get connected, whether they need help in housing, employment, health care, benefits, education, certainly the mental health area. And I can see why you're so passionate about it. Stephen, thanks for all the work that you're doing, and thanks for the time that you've given us. We hope you enjoyed listening to the interview with Mission United, Stephen Moss, and we're going to talk to John James, Army veteran, running for office, successful businessman, right after these messages and the news.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are glad to have you back to listen to an interview with John James, an Army veteran, West Point grad, successful Detroit area businessman, and now running for U.S. Senate. He tells us about his adventures both in the military and in the business world. Hope you enjoy it. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today John E. James, an Army veteran with some interesting military, business, and public service experience. John, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor.
Well, this is I think one of those stories that doesn't get enough play in the, you know, your journey through life is something that the press wouldn't talk about, because gosh darn it, you served your country and you're successful. We don't want to talk about those kind of guys. So let's start with this. John, where did you grow up? And I know you went to the West Point. How did you get yourself into West Point?
My goodness. Well, first of all, thanks again for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to share. I think that raising awareness that not only the military as a continued option to serve this nation, but also life after service. I think it's a tremendous opportunity, and thanks for you allowing me to spread that. It all got started, actually, when I was in high school. I watched my mom and dad and how they lived their lives and looked at what they were doing, and I developed a passion for service based upon being raised in the church and having my values of God and country, faith and family, service before self, and I got those long before I got into the military. I mean, I learned how to say yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, long before I got to West Point. But I realized when I was young that those of us who have the privilege, blessings, platform have an obligation, not an option, to serve. And I knew that so many people had fought and died for my right to be able to think independently and be able to live my life with this freedom this country offers, and understand that where my father came from, he didn't have these same opportunities. My father came from Mississippi. He was born in 1941 in Starkville, Mississippi, lived directly across the street from Mississippi State University, and couldn't go there because he was black. And because we live in a country that, yes, while flawed, still provides better and more opportunities than any other country, he was able to work hard. He's a Vietnam veteran. He was able to work hard, start his own company in 1941 with one truck, one trailer, and no excuses, and was able to grow a company from zero to $35 million between 1971 and 2012, starting by hauling beer back and forth between Detroit and Kenosha. That's the kind of country that we have here. If you work hard, you do the right things, you pull. A guy like my father, who had every excuse, didn't take one of them. And by watching that and growing up, I understood that I needed to give back too. So rather than follow the normal path, I decided to go to West Point because I wanted to continue my service to this great nation. And I went to West Point, graduated in 2004, became a Ranger qualified Apache pilot, flew 750 hours combat in Operation Iraqi Freedom, 07-09. And then I came back and I was able to deploy some of the lessons that I learned. The three biggest rules I learned in the military: one, no excuses; second, leaders eat last; and three, mission first, people always. And that translates very, very well to business world, because it helped me to understand culture and investing in talent and technology to be able to grow that company. My father was able to take from zero to $35 million. I was able to grow from $35 million to $137 million in less than 5 years, and also create 100 additional jobs in Detroit and east of the Mississippi, coming out of the greatest recession in our lifetime. So I just want to be able to take the skill set that I've learned and develop from the battlefield to the boardroom, and be able to serve the people of the state of Michigan and people of this great country of ours.
Well, John, I think a lot of people will have to replay this section of the podcast interview so that you get they listen to you again about this incredibly packed story, but it really begins with family, doesn't it? It began with your mom and dad and instilling in you a certain set of values and matching those up with church and faith. Would you say that's sort of the bedrock of who John James is?
Of course. My core values: faith in the family, God and country, service before self. And again, those sound very, very familiar, because and folks call those conservative values now, and they are. But those are American values. Those are the traditional American values. Those are the things that unite us. This country is overwhelmingly, despite what the media and the progressive far left will tell us all, these are the things that regardless of whether you're left or right, black or white, north and south, most people can agree that faith and family, God and country, service before self, is what made us great. And it's what made us great, and it's what will continue to make us great. And that is why I want to continue my service to this country, because there's nothing better and there's nothing more important than giving back.
You mentioned getting into West Point, but most West Pointers skip over how tough those years are and how tough it is just to get in. Can you talk to us a little bit about the journey to actually get into West Point and through West Point?
Well, the journey to get into West Point, it actually started, I talk a lot about my dad, but my mother was instrumental. West Point seemed unattainable. to me as a high schooler. But I even began to entertain the thought because my mom always told me, John, you can move farther, faster, and work harder now than you ever will in your entire life. Don't ever look back and wonder. And that was my mother has been, if my father kind of charted the roadmap, my mother gave me the gas, but the gas in the tank with the inspiration. My mother said, John, don't tell yourself no. Let them tell you no. Always ask. Remain respectful. And these are these nuggets, these kernels, that fuel that led me to go through the hard steps of writing those essays, do the prerequisites in terms of going to Boise State and becoming a Boise State governor, leading in my community, doing community service, and doing all the steps it took to even be considered for West Point. And then you go through a long application process. It is arduous. But on top of that, you know, I didn't get directly into West Point. They offered me, after all that, an opportunity to spend a year at the United States Military Academy Preparatory School at then Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. And that was seen by many as a step back, but I looked at it as a step up. I was able to enlist in the Army as a private for 11 months and 20 days, who was counting, right? And I was able to work my way into West Point and then get into West Point. So I had to earn my seat at the table in order to earn my way into be commissioned. And I'll tell you, as a 17-year-old young man, taking a look at 1 year of prep school, 4 years of West Point, and 5 years of minimum service obligation, that's 10 years. You're looking at the next 10 years of your life when you're 17. That's a really daunting thing to do. So I tried to not look at it from the where I was forward. I tried to look at it from where I would be as a 40-year-old looking back. And I asked myself as a 17-year-old, what would 40-year-old John tell you to do? And I chuckle now because I'm 36. I'll be 37 in a couple months. And I thought 40-year-old John was an old, old guy, but now it's like 3 years away. But 40-year-old John would have advised me, similarly to my mother, John, you don't ever want to have to wonder. And so I've always pushed myself. I've been walking by faith, not by sight. I've always pursued a lifestyle of discomfort. And I've always endeavored to serve other people. And so that's how I got into West Point.
Well, I think it's really important for people to understand. You know, we can look at successful folks like you, John, and say, oh, he was born on Easy Street. It's good for us to listen to stories about, you know, hey, I had to go to a year of prep school before they would let me into West Point. And nowadays, kids get one little setback, they throw up their hands and they quit. And it's easy to do that as an adult as well. So I think it's important to hear the nuggets you're giving us in this regards. How did you end up choosing to do the route of piloting Apache helicopters? And tell us how that changed your course in the military and into the Iraq War.
Oh, my gosh. I had terrible vision. I was blind as a bat. But the thing is, when you're a child and you have terrible vision, you don't know because that's all you've seen your entire life. My brother actually wanted glasses because his friends in elementary school had glasses. And my mom, of course, took him to get his eyes checked. He had perfect vision, right? And so the little blind mouse, me, sitting in the corner, bumping into walls and such, the doctor was like, well, you've already checked this guy. Let me check your other son. And so he put me in the chair, and he's like, wow, Mrs. James, your other son, John, me, can't see anything. So I had glasses all the way through high school. I mean, I looked like Steve Urkel in elementary school. It was no joke. And I show up on Halloween as Steve Urkel, and people would ask me where my Halloween costume was. But anyway, I went all the way through. I needed glasses. So aviation was never an option for me, ever. But, you know, folks say that they're coincidences. I don't believe in coincidences. I believe this is a God thing, honestly. I never considered flying because I never thought the opportunity was there for me. So we're going to come back to that. I was a part of a program that the Army was starting, and it started for the very, very first time where West Pointers were the first subset in the entire military to actually have LASIK available to them. And so I was part of a group of 10 cadets who was eligible to get LASIK surgery because we had already, I guess, passed the Army flight test. I didn't even know about the Army flight test because, again, I hadn't considered aviation as an option because I couldn't see. I took the flight test because I was bored, and this is what you do at West Point. We're such nerds. We take tests for fun. And so I went down, took the test, no preparation, passed it, and was able to have that opportunity, got LASIK surgery, and then was able to select aviation as my first choice. Aviation comes with an additional service obligation of an additional year after, so it's a minimum 6 years on top of the original that you have, and that starts after flight school. But I resolved myself. I would rather do something that was hard, and I would rather do something that I love doing for 5 minutes than doing something that I hated for a single second. So I went aviation. Remember when I was talking about people not knowing what's available to them because they never considered the option, and I had the option to fly. I believe there are too many young people around, especially in Detroit, and to be quite frank, young African-American boys and girls who are not aware of what is available to them unless somebody shows them. I was shown that there was a path for me to fly, and I want to show other folks, regardless of their background, that they have the opportunity to fly as well. And so I wouldn't have known about that opportunity if somebody hadn't sat me down and gave it to me, and I have to pay that forward for generations to come.
I think that's absolutely right, and veteran radio listeners, we're talking to John James, an Army veteran, Apache helicopter pilot, successful businessman, which we'll get back to here shortly, and also seeking to continue his public service through elected office. But John, you're right. Too many kids don't know what's available to them. And I think that's one of the things the military does pretty well is when you enlist.
Absolutely.
You know, they test you and they show you and you get exposed to things and maybe you're going to be a good mechanic or maybe you're going to be, it turns out you're good at computer analysis or in your instance with a little corrective eye surgery, you can fly. So I think you're really hitting a nail on the head when we've just got to expose our young people and certainly our African-American kids in urban cores. There's more opportunity out there than their mind has wrapped itself around yet.
You know, I'll tell you what, but it's not even around the skills. It's not even around the hard skills. It's on the soft skills. The thing that the military and what service can expose our kids to is each other. Our country is splintering at the seams, and mostly because we've retreated into our own echo chambers and our safe spaces. And what the military does is, I mean, most of our listeners understand this. You show up on day one. Nobody cares what you look like. No one cares what you did in high school. You're all on the same team. And all basic training is just getting people to work together, to break down that individualism, to understand that we work best when we work together. And I truly believe that if the youth of this country, through service, actually pursued an opportunity to get outside of where they were raised, there are too many people in this country who were born in City X, who were raised in City X, who go to high school in City X, go to in-state college or community college or skilled trade, and then they grow up in the same town and they're in the cemetery a couple miles from the hospital they were born in. And I think that one of the biggest gifts that the military gives is part of an essential a part of education is exposure. And to travel and to understanding different people, places, and things. And I would say that was the biggest benefit and the biggest lesson that the military service gave to me.
And I would encourage our veteran radio listeners to take that little nugget of wisdom and pass it on to their kids and their grandkids and their nieces and nephews. I don't think everybody fully appreciates, you know, it was that old slogan, you know, join the Navy, see the world. There's a lot of value in that. And not everybody ends up in a war zone. But you get a lot of education, a lot of growth opportunity by meeting all the diverse folks in this country and then seeing the world, which helps you realize you got it pretty good. So let's turn to your time in Iraq where, again, it would have demonstrated to you, you know, you got it pretty good in the United States. Tell us about your time in Iraq.
Well, the biggest thing that, well, many of the biggest things that struck me is – You mentioned it. We don't realize how good we have it, but not only do we not realize how good we have it, is we don't realize how fragile our freedom is. We don't realize how fragile our freedom is. Our freedom only exists as long as we have people willing to fight for it. And that's not just men and women in uniform. That's people who we send to Washington. I swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And a domestic enemy is complacency. A domestic enemy is laziness. A domestic enemy is entitlement. A domestic enemy is neither understanding the Constitution nor caring about where it came from. And I truly believe that our Constitution, I've said our Constitution is under attack. I think that we can all agree that it is least eroding. And if you can take a look at what we saw in Iraq, these are people who decades before, you look at Iraq and Iran, there were doctors, there were lawyers, there were business people, and now their country has been plunged into near chaos when we were there because the extremism and the lack of economic opportunity that folks had there gave rise to a dictator which destabilized the entire region. And so now you have doctors, former doctors in Iraq, who had to immigrate here and they had to become taxi drivers in America because they didn't have that same opportunity in their country. And folks say that's extreme, but I'll tell you what, our Constitution was born out of years of philosophy and history. This is a great experiment, our country here, and it's been working because it's the result of watching what didn't work. Totalitarianism does not work. Tyranny does not work. Communism does not work. Socialism does not work. And do you know 40% of millennials these days believe that socialism is a better way of life? I reject that fundamentally because I've seen what happens when you take freedom away from folks, when you take self-determination away from folks. And I actually, during a time when watching other folks suffering and having fathers making a tough decision, do I let my baby starve or do I leave this backpack by the road and knowing that there's an IED in here that's going to kill Americans? And when you're making those tough, hard decisions, you're backing people into a corner. We need to do a better job here of taking those irrevocable decisions away from the most vulnerable in our society. And I think a great way to do that is by having more people with the talent and the passion to serve to come back and serve in their communities. While I was over in Iraq, I'm flying combat missions, and I see images of Detroit, Flint, Saginaw, Muskegon, areas of a home that look worse than the combat zone I'm flying in. And I resolved that I wanted to come back because I didn't see enough people fighting for Michiganders the way I was fighting for Iraqis over in Baghdad. So I came back to help provide economic opportunity because I couldn't rationalize that within myself, that even at home we could be slipping away so quickly. The neglect over decades of mismanagement at home is absolutely inexcusable. And I want to take my leadership skills and ability to work with everyone, left or right, black or white, north or south, to make this state the greatest state in the union.
Well, I want to just, as we come to the end of our time, I want to point out that, John, you are, you mentioned it early on, that James Group International is a supply chain management and logistics company. It's a series of companies, including Renaissance Global Logistics and Motor City Intermodal Distribution, that you manage as president of James Group International and CEO of RGL. You've been able to grow the economic base by up to $137 million. You've added another 100 jobs in this process. You're a smart guy. You not only went to West Point, but you picked up a master's from Penn State University in supply chain management. You picked up an MBA from the University of Michigan Ross School of Business. Did your military career, do you think, impact your management style?
Absolutely. In my entire life, I've always been the youngest among those who had more years on me. And so I learned very early on that I have to listen and learn before I lead. And that has played an integral part of my leadership style, because when you lead by listening, not only do you kind of have a leg up on really? I mean, my mother always said any idiot can make his own, can learn from his own mistakes. It takes a smart person to learn from other people's mistakes. And so when you listen to people who are older than you, then it enables you to learn from other folks' mistakes, which in essence allows you to kind of move further and progress faster in life. So I just surrounded myself with smart folks, built a great team, and I'm just the guy who gets the credit and the blame, the credit for the success and the blame for the failures. I usually give the credit to my team because they're really the ones who've done it.
Well, I think it's bearing fruit. I think your new endeavor running for U.S. Senate in the state of Michigan is an extension of that service you talked about. If people want to know more about John James and what you're doing, can you direct them somewhere, a website or something that they can follow more about what you're up to these days?
Sure, we have one of those. Please go to johnjamesforsenate.com. That's johnjamesforsenate.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at johnjamesmi. That's johnjamesmi. Thank you so much for your support.
Well, we're glad to have you on Veterans Radio. It's been a pleasure. We're really proud of the work that you've done for the service of the country and the military, and as much so for coming back and investing time and resources to grow a business and give opportunities and jobs to people in the area. Good luck on your new endeavor, John.
My pleasure. My honor. Thank you so much. Let's fly.
Well, we're certainly glad to bring you these stories on Veterans Radio. You can keep in touch with Veterans Radio on the net at www.veteransradio.net. You can like us on Facebook and follow along. And certainly on that website, you can send us contact information, send us an email, get on our newsletter, and learn what shows are coming up next. We are always looking for story ideas and people we should interview, so feel free to use that contact information to send it along to Dale or Bob or myself. We do appreciate the ideas that you bring to us, and we are very happy that WHAM is extending its reach through the use of a new FM transmitter, so we'll have even greater reach in the mid-Michigan area, telling the stories of our veterans. And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.